Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ed Williams. The opioid epidemic and what to do about it has become a national conversation in recent years. Congress has passed bills trying to help. President Trump appointed an opioid task force. The New Mexico legislature has passed several opioid bills. But have those efforts gotten help to the people that need it? This morning, we're looking at the national and local responses to the opioid epidemic and asking whether they're making a difference to communities in our state. Are you in recovery from opioid addiction? Are you trying to get into recovery? What do New Mexico's communities need to win their fight with opioid addiction? Our phone lines are open at 277-KUNM. That's 505-277-5866. Or send your thoughts by email to letstalk@kunm.org. Joining me in the KUNM studio is Maggie Hart Stebbins, Bernalillo County Commissioner for District 3. Hi, Maggie.
Good morning, Ed.
Well, for starters, last year, Bernalillo County declared an emergency over opioid overdoses. Tell us why the commission decided to do that. Why declare an emergency, and what does that mean in terms of policy for us here in Bernalillo County?
So you ask, why did we declare an emergency? Well, clearly opioid use is a public health emergency in this community. You know, the last data I saw showed that there were almost 200 overdose deaths in Bernalillo County last year. And when you think about that, 200 deaths, if we had 200 automobile deaths, if we had, you know, 200 deaths as a result from any other disease, everybody would be aware of it. We would have all of our resources focused on addressing that issue. And the opioid crisis clearly needs the same kind of coordinated, dedicated response. So in declaring it emergency, part of the goal was just to make it clear to the community just how serious this is.
200 deaths, is that a higher number than it was in previous years? Is this a growing phenomenon, or have we kind of leveled out?
Well, we continue to see an increase, but we are leveling out relative to other communities. You know, New Mexico, Bernalillo County has consistently had one of the highest overdose death rates in the nation per capita. So overdose death rate per capita. And we're now 7th or 8th or 10th. And that's only because other communities are now beginning to surpass us, which is not anything we can take pride in. You know, clearly what we want to do is begin to reduce these deaths. But we are beginning to see a leveling off of the overdose death rate. So,
yeah, I'm glad you brought up that the reason that we're falling in terms of the list is because other, like, I guess West Virginia, Ohio, these places have gotten so high. And I hear people a lot of times tout that, you know, we're not the worst in the country anymore. But I do think it's important to point out that that's, you know, maybe things aren't changing here so much as they are in the rest of the country. So talking about numbers themselves might be, you know, not the best way to talk about this. In terms of policy, what did declaring an emergency do? Did that open up resources for you? Was it a symbolic gesture?
Well, Bernalillo County has for many years been focused on this, and primarily because we see the impact through the criminal justice system. We run the jail. Bernalillo County runs MDC, and we see the number of people with substance use disorders in our facility. We see a high number, a high rate of individuals who are suffering from mental illness. Because they can't get treatment services in the community, they end up in our jail at the highest cost to deliver those services in probably the most inappropriate setting. And so for Bernalillo County, for more than 10 years, before I joined the county commission, this has been a focus. How do we help people who are suffering from these behavioral health disorders get treatment outside, well, good treatment while they're in our facility, so hopefully they can get set on the road to recovery, but also how do we build a network of services outside the jail walls?
Lauren Reichelt is also in the studio with us today. Lauren is director of Rio Arriba County Health and Human Services. Hi, Lauren. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Ed.
How would you characterize the situation we're in right now? I mean, Maggie Hart Stebbins was just saying in Bernalillo County, this is an emergency. Are we in an emergency in northern New Mexico, Rio Arriba County? I mean, is that the way you would describe it?
Well, we've been in an emergency for about 25 years. For us, this really, I think Rio Arriba was the first county in the country to be hit by this epidemic. And it first became really apparent to us around 1998 or 1999. I have been the county's health and human services director since that time. So when Rio Arriba first started trying to respond to this, the country was not looking at it as an epidemic. They were looking at it as a law enforcement problem. And back then, it was the middle of the war on drugs, or probably the height of the war on drugs. And so the federal response, when it was first announced that we have such a severe, in Rio Riba, it was a heroin overdose death problem initially. And so what I did was I took a look at the data, and I found that in up until about 1997, what we had been seeing were overdoses that were caused primarily by Librium and Valium. And so the state came in, they took away the prescribing privileges of the doctors who were over-prescribing, and that is when the heroin overdose death rate really started to skyrocket. And so back since 2000, my position on this has been that this is an epidemic and that we need to treat it as a public health threat. And so in Rio Riba, what we're really looking at is because of the way funding flowed during the years of the war on drugs, it went very heavily into law enforcement, corrections, and we were pretty light on treatment and on prevention and on other health-related solutions to the problem. So now we're having to reorganize our entire response system so that it's weighted in the other direction, and that's a pretty heavy lift.
What happened when the focus was on law enforcement and the war on drugs? Was there any effectiveness to that approach?
No, none whatsoever. What happened was every time HIDA came in and did a big raid in Rio Riba County, and it was these were like paramilitary raids with helicopters and everything you can imagine, the overdose death rate would double overnight. It would stay very high for a few weeks and then go down again. And so what was happening was heroin was being removed, so the drug of choice was being removed. People were mixing other drugs, and they were taking things they were unfamiliar with, and then when heroin came back, they were using it at a level that they were not accustomed to anymore, and they were overdosing. And so over the years, we've seen a complete change in the culture and attitudes of law enforcement towards the problem. Regularly now, the sheriff or the Española police chief or their staff will come into our office with people that they don't want to book. They want to get them into treatment. And so I think the entire law enforcement community, I cannot remember the name right now of the officer who heads the Region 3 high-intensity drug trafficking task force, but he's really pushing us to bring on certified peer support specialists so that we can have these people respond right after a raid with law enforcement to give out Narcan, to help people to understand where they can access treatment, to work with families of people who have been arrested, so we can get them out of the criminal justice system and into the healthcare system where they belong.
Lisa Kakari-Stone is in the studio with us as well, and Lisa is a professor at the UNM College of Population Health and director as well of UNM's new Behavioral Health Center. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
Lisa, you write about, you research health disparities, what determines health at the community level, right? I mean, how do things like poverty, trauma play into New Mexico's opioid epidemic?
Sure. I want to talk a little bit. Lauren and Commissioner Maggie Hart-Stevens are talking to the point of an epidemic, and I want to talk about the causes of that epidemic. How do we think about that from a disparities perspective? We know that men between ages of 35 to 54 years old are the highest hit with the opioid epidemic, in addition to American Indian, Alaska Natives, those with lower income, those with mental health conditions, patients who are taking highly daily doses, and opioids are combined with other drugs, as Lauren was mentioned. At the community level, we have to think about that beyond just the individual user. Those living in rural areas or in communities with higher prescription drug use are the highest hit. And we also have to go at the systems level. I'm really surprised that I looked at the commission report that came from President Trump's commission to address the opioid epidemic. I did not see one strategy to curb through regulation of the pharmaceutical industry. So at the system level, the prescriber volume is really high.
And New Mexico has put some controls in, right, on doctor shopping. I mean, certain counties and municipalities have done that in terms of overprescribing, being able to just go to different doctors. So there are some local level responses to the overprescribing aspect of it.
Yes, I really would like to give some kudos here to Espanola Presbyterian Hospital and Brenda Romero, who is the administrator of the hospital. She, a number of years ago, took steps to make sure that admitting privileges in Espanola Hospital were tied to providers checking the PMP database. Okay, and so for what people want who are listening wonder what that is, that's a database of prescriptions and prescribing practices that the state maintains. So for a particular person coming in, say with pain, seeking opioids or something else, they can look and see what they've already been prescribed. So the problem was there was a lot of doctor shopping. Brenda used to complain about people that somebody she saw go into one of the pharmacies with a briefcase and just fill it. It was filled with drugs, and they added this prescription to their briefcase. And so in order to have admission privileges at Espanola Hospital, and this has been for a while now, the doctors have to check that database first, and they will not prescribe if it's a duplicate prescription. And so what we see as a result in Rio Riba, and have seen for a few years, is that while our heroin overdose death rate is very high, I think Santa Fe's death rate due to prescription medications, and they're right next door, is double ours. And so what that tells me is that what the hospital is doing is working. It's not doing anything to limit the amount of heroin coming into the county, but it is helping to get a handle on prescriptions. And back 20 years ago or 10 years ago, I'm so old now I lose track, but when I took a look at 10 years worth of death data, what I found was that a lot of the death certificates of people said that they had initially become addicted after an accident when they were prescribed drugs, and then switched to heroin because it was easier to find and cheaper. So yes, the state is doing something to take a look at how prescriptions are managed. It's high time, and I think I'm really happy they're doing it.
877-899-5866 is the number to call to join the conversation. We're talking about the opioid epidemic in New Mexico and ways that we could find ourselves out of this problem that we have. And we have Lawrence Medina on the line calling from Taos. Lawrence Medina is director of Zia Community Services. That's a recovery center up north. And Lawrence, thanks for your call.
Thank you, Ed. It's a pleasure to be on this morning.
You're on the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's Advisory Council, right? That's an advisory council within the federal government that focuses on addiction treatment. So when you're talking to people at SAMHSA, I wonder what you tell them is the biggest issue in Taos County and rural New Mexico in terms of treatment for addiction.
Yes, as a member of the Center for Substance Abuse Treatment with SAMHSA, I had the opportunity to advocate for New Mexico, especially rural and frontier areas. And, you know, larger cities such as Santa Fe and Albuquerque, the numbers are high in terms of deaths, number of incarceration, whereas in rural and frontier areas, we don't get a lot of attention due to the low numbers. However, the biggest issue that I see we're faced with is access to treatments for smaller communities. And when we see these deaths happen, it shakes up a small community very much. But with these barriers to access to treatment, we're seeing that also it just becomes a norm. That's just the way it is. And it's unfortunate because smaller communities are getting hit hard. And we need more policies that would divert funding for more treatment. Let me give you an example. Taos, we lost our detox center a couple of years ago. The jail is being bombarded, as well as the hospital, but there's no money, you know. And then the politics of the money, it's complicated, you know. But how, as we as a community that our dialogue is to bring in resources to open up a detox center.
We need to take a short break here. We're talking about New Mexico's opioid epidemic and ways forward. Bernalillo County Commissioner Maggie Hart Stebbins is in the studio with us, along with Lauren Reichelt of Rio Arriba County and Lisa Kakari Stone of UNM. Lawrence Medina of Zia Community Services is on the phone with us from Taos. We'll take a short break right here, and then we'll be back in a minute. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Support comes from DaVita Medical Group, who believes everything matters. During this year's open enrollment period, there are choices when it comes to healthcare. More information on DaVita Medical Group at DaVitaMedGroupNM.com.
It's a bit of a novelty and a rare treat to get to hear it. A concerto featuring solo double bass in front of an orchestra. It's on the way from a concert by the Houston Symphony featuring soloist Robin Kesselman. The double bass concerto by Serge Koussevitzky on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM 89.9, broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico, and we're back talking about responses to the opioid epidemic here. Are you a doctor or a health worker? What do you think would be an effective policy solution? Is your son or daughter in the public school system? Have schools done a good job educating them on addiction? What about solutions that aren't financial? Do we need to be destigmatizing this issue? Give us a call now. The number to call is 277-5866. That's 505-277-5866. You can also join the conversation on Twitter, where we're live tweeting the program and we're using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. And Lawrence Medina from Taos, right before we left off on the break, you were saying that the detox center in Taos recently closed. What's the impact of that closure been on the community there?
It has been significant. Because now, you know, folks are, you know, the hospital's being bombarded. And just to give you an example, that unintentional drug overdose seemed to be an increase. And the community, and I look at the hospital and the jail, they're really bombarded. And they really don't know what to do. There's been discussion of trying to open up a detox center, working with other centers, you know, such as OI Recovery in Española, but the waiting lists are so high, and so it's just, you know, we have a major problem in regards to access to treatment, and so I don't know. The jail has a very high recidivism rate, and I think it's costing the taxpayers more money without having those type of services. And it's unfortunate, and we're really in dire straits here. When we lost that detox center, there's been a lot of talk about how are we going to get that open, but it's unfortunate that it boils down to money.
Maggie Hart Stebbins, I imagine that a lot of the people that might have gone to the detox center in Taos or Española at OI are looking to Bernalillo County, because we do have Turquoise Lodge, which takes Medicaid here. We do have probably more resources in this part of the state than other places. What's the impact on Bernalillo County of the lack of services in other parts of the state? Are you seeing an increase in demand because of that?
I think Bernalillo County is does draw people with all types of illnesses when they can't receive the services that they need in the rest of the state. And we realize that with University Hospital and many of the resources we have here, yeah, people will come here when they can't find services elsewhere. I think in terms of treatment services, I continue to hear the message, there's nowhere to go. I can't find the treatment that I need. And we realize that there are gaps in the continuum of care, because people with substance use disorders have different needs depending on the specifics of their individual condition, their individual disease. I have to, you know, give a shout out to University Hospital, the Health Sciences Center. You know, they've done a lot of work over the last couple of years to expand the treatment services available through their ASAP program. And I think that, yeah, I think they are seeing increased demand for those services. And we're doing our best to keep up and really try and build a network of appropriate services that can be accessed.
That lack of the continuum of care, I guess, is just a jargony way of saying that you get out of treatment and then you can't find transitional housing, or you need mental health services and you can't. There's no way to get into it, right? And I know, Lauren, you're no stranger to that issue. In Rio Riba County, what sort of policies have you been working on that are trying to close that gap of treatment?
Well, yeah, this is an incredibly important topic. And I do want to say that one of the problems we have in rural communities like Taos and Rio Riba, and I'm not sure if this is true in Albuquerque or not, is the general public mistakes detox for the full range of treatment. So there's a lot of focus on detox, which is a very important stage in treatment. But people don't realize somebody goes into detox and then they've been detoxed and they're still addicted. The treatment has not begun to occur yet. And so it's very important that we have every service that a person may need to complete their treatment in place. So in Rio Riba, we've been looking at this. We have gotten detox online at OI and also at Santa Fe Recovery, and residential treatment at OI for 30, 60, or 90 days. And I believe they're looking at, I think they're finally able to set up something that resembles transitional living too. And Santa Fe Recovery has also been exploring this through the use of Oxford houses. So there's the need for really a two-year course of treatment that includes detox, residential, aftercare, and supported housing. And then for other people, they're able to do this through medically assisted treatment through Suboxone, along with, I believe, that just giving somebody a pill doesn't do it. It requires some very intensive behavioral health therapy for a period of probably about 18 months to go along with it. And then for people who are in the jail, we are not able to bring Suboxone into our jail because it's too easily broken down and people slip it in their cheek and they break it into opioids. And so instead we're looking at Vivitrol in the jail, which is a shot that they can't rip out of their arms. Mm. It lasts for a month. You cannot use it very easily in the community because somebody has to be fully detoxed or they'll become very ill. So there's a wide range of treatments we're looking at putting in place. The problem is that patients are unable to switch from one level of care easily to another for a wide variety of reasons. So our treatment, at the heart of our treatment system, is an intensive case management program, which is what's run out of my office. And our case managers will help people to find a slot in whichever treatment program they're looking for or works for them. And then we'll also help them to get to at least the initial appointments. Transportation can be a real issue because people have had their driver's licenses revoked. They're not allowed in a carpool because they can't ride with other felons. And so how do you get them anywhere? So we have to take them one client at a time to their various appointments.
So you're driving one client at a time physically from one appointment to
yes.
another.
Yeah, wow. That's the only way we can get them. That's why our program is so successful. We have really high rates of people who are able to continue with their treatment. And really a big part of that, besides the fact that we are supportive, is that transportation piece.
277-5866 is the number to call. And let's go to the phones. We have a call from Karen calling from Santa Fe. Hi, Karen.
Hi, I just wanted to pipe in here that I am from the Santa Fe Recovery Detox Center, and I also work in the IOP program in Española. So I work very closely with the opioid addiction. One of the things that we're running into is the lack of beds in recovery across the state, period. I work in case management, trying to get people in everywhere. There are no beds available. It's inundated. Then when we get people out of the milieu, there aren't enough services. We can talk about the Oxford House, but there is no supervision. There are no people there doing case management. There are people there that are using. There are people there that are run out of the milieu, and they have no resources. Transportation, as it was noted, is a big problem. We have Medicaid who is transporting people from one medical unit to another medical unit, but we do not have enough services, and there's not enough funding. The mental health problem is huge, and it goes beyond the opioid addiction. We have people with trauma. We have people who are addicted to the prescription drugs. And my question out there to all the professionals, especially from UNM, is what do we do about recovery homes?
Well, Lisa, do you have an answer on that? Is that something that you hear?
Well, I'm not on the service side of UNM. I'm on the research and policy side. But I really want to commend the three folks who are on the call today with us and their expertise at the local level. And I think treatment access and the workforce, behavioral health workforce and access to behavioral health has been a crisis in New Mexico beyond the opioid epidemic, which I think we need to seriously look at the state level. But I want to make a case for a public health. You were asking about responses to this epidemic. We need a multi-level intervention strategy. Individual treatment is one strategy, working with friends and families, and developing these interventions that really encourage engagement with family members and loved ones, because it's a systems issue. It's a family systems issue. I was a mental health provider in Rio Arriba County for about 6 years, so I understand from the front lines of mental health that you need to engage the cross-generational families in this issue. The third level is the community. And as Lauren was mentioning, having case management and strategic actions at that local level. The other intervention is at the prescriber level, mandating prescriber education initiatives in medical and dental schools and other health professions are really important. At the state government level, we're seeing actions by governors, as well as looking at medical assisted treatment facilities and beefing that up. At the federal level, we are also looking at the importance in enforcing the Mental Health Parity Act that was under the Affordable Care Act. And that piece is important because we have to have similar treatment and diagnoses and referrals that we have as for primary care. And one area we haven't talked about is tribal government. Mm. And I think the Indian Health Services plays a huge role, as well as the sovereign nations.
Right. Well, let's go back to the phones. We have a listener from Rio Arriba County who's calling in to share his personal experience with addiction. Hi.
Hi, I'm here.
Thanks for your call. Yep. What's on your mind? What would you like to share?
Well, I'm a resident, born and raised here in Rio Arriba County. You know, I've probably seen everything go by, you know, and like the gentleman from Cal said, we're in dire straits and have been for a long time. Now, I don't know why it hasn't been looked at earlier. We've gone through a lot of kids lost, a lot of my family members, personal close family members. I'm a retired educator, and I've seen a lot of waste as far as the kids and talents and so forth. And my personal take on this, I've talked to a lot of kids on the street. Most of them fall by the wayside. First of all, through lack of self-worth, not being able to get a job. There's no economic solvency, and they fall and they fall into a state of not being able to care for themselves anymore. So they start, what is it, getting high, or some of them start with the pills, and then later on they can't afford it. They go to the cheaper stuff, the heroin, whatever, and it has been a declining thing, as we all know. And it's like the gentleman from Tulsa and the other ones that so I can hear it and I can sense it in their hearts, the grief, the need. But it's like we've been put aside, you know. And now it's a national epidemic. Not just we're the highest per capita because we're in Rio Arriba County. And it's the highest, but it's now a situation that's not going to get any better.
What do you think would be a solution? I mean, are there any things that you think could practically help the kids that you're talking about, the people that you know that are going through addiction?
Talk to some of these kids. As a matter of fact, I was talking to one the other day, and he says, I stopped using, he said. Yeah. and we're all ears just about right now, as I was then. And I said, well, how did you do it? Did you go cold turkey or what? And he says, I just got tired. He said, I just got tired of using it. And I was like, well, is it Gable? He said, yeah. He said, because I didn't want to be on the synthetic stuff. He said, that's the boxing. And the other stuff, he said, I just got tired of it. He said, and I started seeking spiritual help. And yes, I'm going to get God involved here. And he said, I started crying out in my spiritual help. He said, and by golly, he's been clean, I don't know, months, good amount of months. And then there was another guy that would always hit me up for money in Española. And he's kind of a relative. He's from Chimayo, but he'll remain anonymous, just like right. me. And I said, he said, you got $2? And I said, yes, I do. I was on my way from work. And I said, I got $2. I'm going to give them to you, but first we're going to talk. I said, I said, you know what, buddy? I said, we grew up together. It's time you stop using, I said. You know, we had a heart-to-heart talk. I had a heart-to-heart talk with him because he's a cousin of mine. And I said, you know, I just let him have it. You know, you need to stop. And I'm not saying this is going to work for a lot of them, because some of it's been proven, scientifically proven, that for some, it's easier to get off than for others. You know, right. And I said, you need to get a job. I said, so he got a job. Now he's working. I saw him the other day. I hadn't seen him in like 3-4 years, man. He's gained weight. He's working. He's like, now I'm not saying this works for everybody, but I'm saying if there's a lot of ways that we can help these individuals. And like I said, most of it is getting and interacting with them, you know, going on the streets and talking to them and says, you know, because otherwise by opening hospitals, like you said, we go in there, they give us the synthetic stuff, you know, 3-5 weeks later, they get clean, they go back on it again. It's a major issue that if it's not tackled at all levels, it's not going to go away.
Right. Well, thank you so much for your call. Guys, is this, you know, basically I think I'm hearing we need peer support. Are there efforts to do this in Bernalillo County and Rio Riba County and other parts of the state that have been successful?
So, Ed, I think you probably know in 2014, the Bernalillo County Commission asked voters if they would support a new gross receipts tax dedicated to expansion of behavioral health services. And 69% of voters said yes. So the County Commission in 2015 implemented a new tax, and we have begun addressing some of the high priorities. And when people talk about the supportive services that are required after someone has gone into treatment, that is what we are focusing on. So supportive housing, youth transitional living, peer-driven support services, case management for people with substance use disorders. We're partnering with the city. The city has just reprogrammed some funds to fund intensive case management. We have a transition planning and resource center for people who are coming out of incarceration. So if they've been getting treatment in our facility, they'll be connected with treatment out in the community. And so, peer recovery or peer support services is one of our priorities. And so we are addressing that and some of the other support services that people need when they're in recovery.
We're up against a break, but I'm curious about in Rio Riba County, Lauren, because this has been a problem that's been going on for so long that now you have generations of people that have gone through addiction, and I assume you have a pretty big base of people who might have the skills to be peer resource, peer support counselors and things like that.
Yes. In fact, Rio Riba County is looking at holding a certified peer support worker training and certification in conjunction with OPRE, which is the Office of Peer Recovery and Engagement from the state, in Española, probably in March. And we'd like to look at being able to place peer support workers in a variety of settings. We'd like some to go with the police as an outreach team to places where an arrest has occurred. And we would like to see others housed at the hospital to respond to overdoses and at the clinics and also with our various treatment providers.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We're broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico, and we're talking about the local and national responses to the opioid epidemic and whether they're cutting it for communities here. What would help your community fight addiction? Have state and local governments done enough? What should the federal government be doing for us here in New Mexico? Give us a call now. The number is 877-899-5866. That's 1-877-899-5866. You can also send us an email to letstalk@KUNM.com. kuenm.org. Short break here, and then we'll be right back.
It's not every day you have a car to donate. In fact, it may be once in a lifetime. But when the time comes, do yourself and KUNM a favor. Donate it to keep great programs like this one on the air. If you itemize deductions, you'll get a sizable tax deduction, plus we'll give you a KUNM membership as our thanks for your special gift. Because it is special to donate your longtime car or truck. When you're ready, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
A 16-year-old Yupik boy endured death threats after he successfully hunted a whale to feed his community. Whaling is a cultural tradition for many Alaska Natives, but is scrutinized by outsiders. On Next Native America Calling, we're talking about the importance of whaling and how outside views can affect Alaska Native communities.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ed Williams, reporter for Public Health New Mexico. It's a KUNM reporting project providing in-depth investigative coverage of public health and the impacts of poverty in our state. And we're back talking about the opioid epidemic and ways that we might be able to find our way out of it. Give us a call at 877-899-5866 to share your perspective, solutions that aren't financial. If you're someone who's benefited from a local or national policy aimed at fighting addiction, we want to hear from you. So that's 877-899-5866. And on the phone with us now, we have Kathy Sutherland-Brow, who is a director of Inside Out Recovery in Espanola and Taos. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for your call. You, I understand, are working on a new program to get detox and treatment services to people in rural communities where they are not able to get them. And we've been talking about how there's a huge gap in those services, especially in rural and frontier parts of the state. Can you tell us a little bit about the problem that you're trying to address?
Yes. I think that Lawrence made a good point, if I may, before I talk about the mobile wellness unit. Regarding the detox situation, it is a crisis in our state, and people cannot get into treatment without detox, and it is not available. We have many cases of people who come in who are crying, asking to go to detox, and we can't get detox. We call all over. We can't get the help that we need. But Inside Out is a peer support center. So all the people that work there are in recovery from addiction. And I think this is very important. We've been in Rio Riba County and Espanola since 2008. We've been in Taos since 2014. And we just launched a new mobile wellness unit. And we're doing outreach in Taos County, Mora County, and Colfax County. And we're going out with a trailer poured out the trailer was financed by BHE Care and Taos. I'd like to add that I think that addiction is about people,
right?
Not numbers. So many.
Kathy, we're losing you there. Looks like a reception issue. Do call us back if you get a chance and you get some more solid reception, because I want to hear a little bit more about the program that you're on. But let's go to Lawrence Medina. Lawrence, I know that you have to leave soon, but did you have one more comment you wanted to add before you go? Lawrence and Taos?
Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you, Ed. I think it's important to understand that of course, the need of treatment services exceeds the resources that are available. And I commend Rio Riba County and Bernalillo County for their efforts. And sometimes that could overshadow the big gaps that exist in rural and frontier areas. Here's a good example. San Miguel County, the jail was dealing with an over 80% recidivism rate. And the warden at the time had been working on a treatment program in the jail called the Reintegration Center. So they went to the legislature trying to get money, and they weren't able to get it. Finally, they had to get a loan to rehab the facility to have a 15-bed reintegration center. I think 3 beds were designated for detox. It's sitting there, and it can't be run because there's no money. And I think this is a policy issue that, you know, people are dying. And set aside the politics, is that our elected officials, how do we get their ear to say, hey, we need some policy change for more resources for these communities? We looked at, you know, not every community could have a detox in residential. However, let's look at regional centers. Taos Detox acted as a regional center, and it worked for Mora, San Miguel County, Raton, and so forth. So I appreciate the efforts that are going on, but again, the need exceeds the resources, and I hope that's something from a policy standpoint that will continue to be addressed.
Thanks, Lawrence. And that is something that you just hear over and over asking people about this. There's just the need exceeds the resource, and that there's just not enough beds in detox or treatment. What's the state legislature done about this? Have we had policies come down to actually address the lack of treatment? The lack of, not the lack of treatment, like there's nothing there because there are great programs available, but they're not big enough. So what's our legislature been doing about that?
Well, the legislature awarded Rio Arriba County a behavioral health investment zone grant that we really are doing two things with. One is getting Narcan out there, which resulted in a 30% drop in the overdose death rate in, I believe it was 2015, and then we held steady the next year while the rest of the country was going up. Plus, it has enabled us to get detox online in Rio Arriba, not enough of it, but we do have it, and also to begin tying our providers together into a network so that people can easily access every different component of care they need. Lawrence is totally right. The problem just outstrips, the need outstrips the resources. And frankly, I think the need outstrips the resources that the state of New Mexico even has. I don't really want to let them off the hook, but we really need a federal response and a strong federal response to this.
You mentioned naloxone, and we have Anna on the phone calling from northern New Mexico with a comment on naloxone. Anna, thanks for calling.
Hi. I just wanted to mention also that in New Mexico, we do have a standing order for nasal naloxone. So anybody can go to their local pharmacy and request to have some dispensed. It doesn't have to be for them. Anyone who has a loved one or family member at risk can also get some. It's covered by a lot of the insurance companies, and some pharmacies also have a supply provided by Department of Health at no charge.
Maggie? I'm sorry. You know, well, the issue, I'm glad you brought up naloxone. There have been bills pushing naloxone federally at the local level. We've heard a lot about it. And of course, naloxone is a nasal spray or kind of an EpiPen that you can give someone who's going through an overdose, and it'll revive them, reverse that overdose. It's a life-saving drug. No one's going to talk about that it's not a great thing. But I wonder if there's maybe a little bit of too much focus on naloxone. If detox centers, if you can't get into detox, but you can reverse an overdose, is that something that we should be looking at? Anybody?
You know, I'd be happy to address that. Naloxone is considered harm reduction, and so there has to be an acknowledgement that some people who are suffering from substance use disorders are not going to be able to get into recovery. And therefore, it's an opportunity just to do harm reduction. Sometimes when someone is resuscitated through naloxone, it's an opportunity to get into treatment. So I think there's real value. There has been some criticism of naloxone, but I think if you are a family member of somebody, a friend, someone whose life is saved through naloxone, I think it's very hard to argue that it's not a good thing.
Is there still...
You would not say that CPR is not important.
Of course, no, and I was not suggesting
same,
that it's
well,
not
I know,
important. But
basically, naloxone is the same thing. It's a way of saving somebody's life. Somebody can't access treatment if they're dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't mean that naloxone is the solution. You wouldn't not put in cardiac units because now you have CPR.
Right, right. So, I guess as a follow-up, We've had, there was bills from the legislature making naloxone available over the counter last year, I believe that was. This year we had making it available to law enforcement. Are we at a point now where there's enough naloxone, or is it still hard for people to get that need it?
And I'd like to just add to that list, you know, there was legislation requiring that incarceration facilities begin to stock naloxone, and we are doing that at the Metropolitan Detention Center. So anybody who wants access to naloxone can get trained and get two doses of naloxone at release. And that is really to address a very well-known statistic that the weeks after someone is released from incarceration, there's like a 600 or 700% increase in overdose death. And so it's really important that people who are coming out of incarceration who may go back to using or be in a community where they will see people who are using have access to naloxone. So we're very pleased about our partnership with the Department of Health on that.
Yes, we're doing the same. And a strange thing we're finding is an awful lot of people are rejecting the naloxone. We're trying to figure out why, and at the moment we're concentrating on their family members and getting naloxone to the family members. We think that people just want to get out of jail so badly, and I would too if I were in the jail,
right, sure,
that they're not even willing to wait 30 seconds or 5 minutes or 25 minutes or whatever it takes to get their naloxone.
Let's go back to the phones. We have Bernie on the line with us calling from Santa Fe. Bernie, thank you for calling.
Yeah, hi. excuse me. My name is Bernie, and I live in Santa Fe, but all my family's from northern New Mexico, and I also went to school up in Española. But, you know, and I am a former heroin addict, and I have overdosed and had a brain injury and was in the hospital after that overdose for like 9 days and almost died. And I'm fortunate that I didn't. But one of the things that I think people should be aware of or consider, or the state should probably look at, is to just invest in the North, because people always talk trash about the North, like even down here in Santa Fe or wherever. And northern New Mexico is like the most beautiful place, I think, in the states that I've seen, and has some of the most beautiful people that will help you no matter what. And yes, there is a drug problem, but I think that's just because there's not like a lot of opportunities or things invested. And I just think the state should probably put more programs, say for arts or other things, to get people involved and try to just invest in the community of the North, I think, you know?
Yeah.
That would help a lot, because the North gives back. Like, Northern is one of the cheapest, or the cheapest university, just trying to get people to go to school there, you know, and has beautiful, wonderful programs. So I just wish we would give back to northern New Mexico.
Well, thanks for that call, Bernie. That kind of lack of economic investment is a theme I think that we hear a lot about. Let's go to another phone call. Nick, calling from Santa Fe as well. Nick, are you with us?
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to bring up the financial aspect of everything and talk about how I think it's a good idea that New Mexico is doing some of these, you know, opioid manufacturers that have been pushing this stuff. And I mean, as long as it remains profitable to sell, you know, opiates or naloxone or whatever to people in New Mexico, the problem's just going to keep getting worse. We have to make it so that these people stop making money off of everyone's misery here.
Nick, I'm glad you brought that up. And Maggie is nodding her head, because Bernalillo County is another one of the jurisdictions that is filing a lawsuit right against the opioid manufacturers. Mora was first, now Bernalillo County, and the state of New Mexico, our attorney general, is filing his own lawsuit.
I think Rio Riba joined into the lawsuit, too.
Did they?
I think so.
So now we have a growing amount of legislation suing the opioid manufacturers. If this goes through and we get some money and damages, how would that be spent? Are we looking at more treatment options, more beds, some of the things that our callers have been bringing up?
You know, from Bernalillo County's perspective, I think one of the prime reasons for filing this is to try to force a change in prescribing, not prescribing practices, but marketing practices, because there's significant research that says that the opioid manufacturers, the pharmaceutical companies, were marketing these as non-addictive. And at the same time, we saw this incredible spike in prescribing and prescription opioid use. And so that's really important that the marketing practices change. But also, if there is a financial recovery, it would go to funding things like treatment that New Mexico at this point in time just doesn't have the resources to fund what's needed.
You know, we mentioned some of the federal things that are happening recently, and there's been kind of a flurry of legislation. We had the CARA Act, the 21st Century Cures Act last year. Those both freed up funding. President Trump has appointed a task force that might do the same thing. We're waiting for that report to be released. Have we seen a boost in our ability to deal with these problems because of these federal policies? Have they made a difference?
Well, some of the federal funding, I have to say, has been really hard for New Mexico's counties and communities to apply for. There are built-in population requirements we don't meet sometimes, or one of the particular bills or funding streams that came down, there was an arcane requirement in the evaluation. I think it was that a high percentage of individuals had to be new and getting into medication-assisted treatment, and since we didn't have the capacity, nobody in New Mexico was able to apply. So that's really a problem. I would like to see those funding streams more open to New Mexico and its communities, and also those all originated out of the Obama administration. I haven't seen this administration really address this problem yet.
Well, we have the interim task force recommendations from President Trump, and we're coming up short on time. But, you know, the recommendations include rapidly increasing treatment capacity, more prescriber education initiatives, medication-assisted treatment, more naloxone, more border security and law enforcement. I mean, do these recommendations align with our needs here in New Mexico, at least in principle?
They do. But the efforts to repeal Obamacare, that would really, if that ever actually happened, it would blow up everything that we've been trying to do.
And of course, those efforts have come short so far, but our state human services department is currently proposing cuts to Medicaid. Mm-hmm. And that's a very real possibility for us in New Mexico. What would that mean?
It would mean less access to treatment because people lack a payer source. And so it's not that treatment providers wouldn't accept people. It's that you cannot stay afloat if somebody's not paying for the services. So grant funding has been cut back because of the Affordable Care Act, because Medicaid is supposed to be paying for so many of these services. If you then remove Medicaid too, you've removed the lifeblood of the system.
What about the services that Bernalillo County is providing?
So again, we have focused, you know, when the tax was passed, we looked at every study that had been done over the last decade, and we have prioritized our spending based on the recommendations from community providers and studies that have been completed over the last many years.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I wish we could talk about this for another hour, but you are listening to KUNM. If you missed part of this program or you want to hear it again, you can find it and past episodes on our website, KUNM.org. We're also podcasting the show on iTunes. Thanks to our guests, Bernalillo County Commissioner Maggie Hart Stebbins, Lawrence Medina of Zia Community Services, Lauren Reichelt of Rio Riba County Health and Human Services, Lisa Kakari Stone of the University of New Mexico. Marino Spencer engineered the program today, Sarah Trujillo screened your calls, and Victor Onimole assisted with production. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project is funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and the McCune Charitable Foundation. Find out more online at publichealthnm.org. I'm Ed Williams. Thanks for listening. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM.